I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, a packed show for you. Another setback for a homeless Seattle landlord who's living in his van while his deadbeat renter throws parties at the house he's not paying to live in.
I had no idea it was going to be March. I thought maybe it would get extended out a month or two.
And the Blaine School District responds to the story we broke on a controversial assignment asking students to score their privilege. Plus, Attorney General Bob Ferguson joins a multi-state lawsuit against Meta
for knowingly harming the mental health of young social media users.
But is his criticism of the company misplaced? That and more today on Undivided. You can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. An update to a story that we broke on Monday's show, which got a lot of you talking, got a lot of social media attention, and that is this Blaine School District handout. I don't know why this is a thing about education that really, because we've done a ton of stories about wild education stories and wild things our kids are taught in our school districts. For some reason, this one really took off. And I think it's, one, just the absurdity of what was given to some kids in the Blaine School District, but also it's a matter of not understanding the point. You know, sometimes with the crazy stuff, I'm like, okay, I understand what they were trying to do, but this isn't the best way to do it. I genuinely don't understand the point of this. So in case you haven't watched the last 2 days, it's a power privilege checklist that some kids in the Blaine School District were given, and it has them create a score of their power and privilege over other students. And I don't know if the goal is to compare it to other kids and decide, oh, who has more power and privilege. But, you know, it based privilege off of things like, are you a man? Are you white? Are you heterosexual? Are you wealthy? Are you traditionally educated? Are you white collar? Are you Christian? And then it said, you're less privileged if you're a lesbian, transgender, poor, self-educated, blue collar, institutionalized, things like that. So just odd stuff. And a lot of stuff that, again, you can't change about yourself. So you're just creating these perpetual victims. Very strange stuff. So we told you on the show yesterday that we'd reached out to the Blaine School District trying to figure out what was the point. What is going on here? So Nicole had sent an email. We got an email back from the superintendent of the Blaine School District, Dr. Christopher Granger. I'm going to read that email for you in full. He says, good afternoon. Thank you for your email and the time to get back to you. Blaine School District deeply values student engagement as part of the learning process. Upon further investigation, the handout was part of a discussion among a small group of students and is not part of any official school curriculum or assignment. When distributing official district-approved information to students and staff, Blaine School District follows a standard review and approval process, which includes approval from leadership. Our district leadership is in the process of following up with our staff team to ensure they are aware of and follow our district's standard information sharing protocol. So reading between the line, it sounds like some teacher gave this to a group of kids during some exercise and didn't approve it with the school administration. And I expected that was probably the case, but these things are happening with increased frequency, where you have teachers that feel the need to go out on their own and do things like this. It was an Olympia Elementary School where they brought in outsiders from Planned Parenthood to teach a sex ed lesson to fourth and fifth graders. And the handouts they gave were not approved, and they were absolutely wild. But just because they weren't approved doesn't mean it didn't happen and doesn't mean it didn't have an impact on the kids. And so there's really a question about, okay, what are the punishments here? And that's the other thing. These schools never will tell us, because it's a personnel issue. Well, how are you holding these teachers accountable for going outside what you say are your established protocols for handouts of this nature? So I really hope that there are consequences. I'm not saying teachers have to be fired. In the case of the Olympia School District, I really thought that teacher ought to be fired, or any teacher that allowed that to happen in their classroom without saying anything. But, you know, I think you have to make sure that you're communicating with teachers about the danger of stuff like this, if the Blaine School District does think stuff like this is hurtful and harmful and dangerous, and putting extra oversight in place for teachers that step outside of what their job is, of what they're supposed to be doing. So I appreciate the Blaine School District following up. Wasn't an approved handout, they say. But I, you know, one of the things that freaks me out, Nicole, is all, you know, we get tips about stuff like this. Can you imagine how much of this happens that we never, ever hear about? I bet we hear about one fraction of 1%.
Yeah, and I will say that I don't think that this teacher probably had a terrible intention, and I think that even the people defending it, I've seen lots of social media discussion about this worksheet, and the people that defend it, I don't think have realized what it could do or the position it puts kids in. They're like, oh, well, that's good to let them know that, you know, moving forward, they have this over this. But what we're trying to point out is the detriment it creates, right? Like what it does to kids
psychologically
and what it actually does. I think that there's an intent and there's an actual, right? And I think I hope us bringing attention to it is not just to rile people up and have them go to their corners,
right.
But to discuss it and have people say, okay, well, how can we make a lesson like this better? How can we teach kids whatever? Or maybe parents should do it.
Yeah. Well, are you turning around as a teacher and telling the kids who have a low power privilege score, hey, that doesn't mean that you can't succeed in life. That doesn't mean you can't, you know, do great things. Mm-hmm. Are you on the back end, you know, making sure that they're not like feeling like, oh, my power privilege score is the end all be all for whether I can succeed. Right. So that is part of the nuance that we do want to bring to these conversations. We don't want to just one off like crazy school districts. And that's why with Olympia, you know, we've been following themes and threads to try to wake people up to what's going on. But I would also say, I think this misses the point that you can struggle in this country and in this world regardless of whether you're a white heterosexual man. I mean, to suggest that if you're a white dude who's straight that you can't have some real struggles on this earth is so ignorant, I really think, of the reality for a lot of people. And so this is placing people into these boxes that they might even belong in.
Based on physical characteristics, based on genetic characteristics, they can't control. All of these are things they can't control.
Right.
So you're saying, hey, this is like you rank very low in power. So like you can never overcome that. Or this is how far you have to come in order to overcome it based on
some weird little score you're having them give.
It's just silly. But I don't think the people that defend it recognize or listen to what people are disputing it with. Right.
Yeah.
So everybody that I saw talk about it is just like, I don't see the problem. I don't see the problem. Okay, listen to what we're saying is the problem.
Right. Yeah, it's not as if, and I kind of mentioned this yesterday, and this is a bigger societal issue, but it's not as if you don't have some privilege if you grew up wealthy and, you know, you had,
absolutely.
You live in North America is one of the things. Of course that puts you on a different playing field than a lot of people on this planet.
Yes.
It's not to say that you can't recognize it. Is this the best method to get someone to recognize and acknowledge that, hey, I started off life with a lot of advantages, and how can I use those advantages to their best? How can I lift people up along the way? This is not that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what those people miss is like, they're like, oh, why is it wrong for kids to know if they, you know, have it better? It's not. Doing it in this way where you're ranking kids based on a score of their privilege is what's wrong. And I'd also say, to my point earlier about you're putting people in boxes, it reminds me of a community theater. I did this story on the show a couple years ago where they gave paid summer internships to kids, but only kids of color. Because the assumption they were making is that, oh, if you have black skin, you're poor and you must need a paid internship. Mm-hmm. And so white kids, regardless of what their need might have been, were not entitled to get a paid internship. It would have to be unpaid. And I think they eventually backtracked from that. But it just shows your vision of the world is so narrow focused. To think that every kid of color is poor, like how offensive that is, to think that every white kid doesn't struggle and has it. I mean, I know from experience that's not true. So this stuff is so narrow, it's useless, and it's just wrong-minded, wrong-headed. So thank you for reaching out to your sources. Like I said, Nicole's on the Blaine beat.
Right.
So
I try.
Well, I appreciate
it. I like the
this.
Discussion that it created, though, because I mean, like I said, I wish it wasn't so cornered sometimes, but you got to believe that within that discussion, even those that go to their corners are going to go there. But somewhere in there is a discussion that wasn't going to happen. And that's why we do this.
And that's all we need to change is you've got those reasonable people in the middle who might look at that and think initially, well, what's the problem? And then as they're willing to engage in conversation, they're like, okay, I get where you're coming from.
Right.
We don't need
to change everyone's mind.
Right.
But I think having a few people who are willing to engage in the conversation and maybe change their perspective a little bit is right. healthy. And that's all you can really
Especially
hope for.
Especially the educators themselves.
Look at us, undivided. All right, moving on. We've got an update on Jason Roth. He is the homeless Seattle homeowner who has a home in South Seattle that he is renting out to someone who has refused to pay him any rent. And as a result, Jason Roth has been living in his van with his dog. And we told you the last time that we had Jason on, we had him on a couple Sundays ago on Sundays with Subscribers to tell his insane story. The last time we had him on, we also talked about this particular tenant, how this isn't a sob story. This is a guy, if you look at his social media, he's spending a lot of time at the gym for so can't you be working? He's spending time on vacation, you know, posting pictures on vacation, and he's having parties at this guy's house. He's throwing parties at Jason Roth's house, having people over after the club, he says, for a house that he hasn't paid rent for. And this has been going on for months and months and months. So I will tell you, having looked at this guy's social media, this is not some sob story of someone who is down on their luck. This is someone who's manipulating a system and living in this man's house for free, renting it out at one point, renting out a space of it on Airbnb. I mean, it's wild. And so Jason Roth was cautiously optimistic because a couple days ago, they had the eviction hearing that was scheduled. He was cautiously optimistic. I say that because he was told and kind of warned by his attorney, hey, you know, these things often just get pushed back and pushed off. And unfortunately, that is the case. You know, Jason went to his court hearing, his tenant, and I use that phrase loosely because I think when you've never paid rent, you are not a tenant, you are a squatter at that point, was also there. And as Jason feared, the case has been pushed back for months. So Jason agreed to come on and chat with us and give us an update. Jason, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me again.
Again. Before we started recording, I was like, oh, is that your puppy? You have your mom's dog with you, and you said it's your emotional support animal today.
I'm babysitting him today, and if I don't want him to run away, so I'm holding him during the interview.
But it also is a good emotional support for what we're about to discuss.
Oh, dogs have gotten me through this whole thing. That's absolutely the truth.
Yeah. So last time we talked, you had an eviction hearing that was scheduled, and you were fearful that it would just be delayed, and it seems like that is what has happened. So can you just give us the down low on what took place?
So I had a feeling it would get delayed, but I was also optimistic that they would read my declaration of all the different events that had transpired and how this wasn't so black and white as the, you know, one issue or just another. There was a host of issues. I thought they would read that and sympathize. Unfortunately, they didn't read any of that. No one really got to talk about any facts of the case. It was a Housing Justice Project lawyer was given right then and there, and there was an automatic continuance. So it was very much automated the way that the process happened. And I had no idea it was going to be March. I thought maybe it would get extended out a month or two. My lawyer thought we could maybe push for an earlier hearing because just the circumstances, I'd love to just move back into my house and have a house for winter. There's no opportunity to do that. There were plenty of other people going through this the same sort of process we were, in other cases, I mean, and, you know, no one was granted any sort of special treatment, and we were likely to not get granted anything either. So March 12th, just stamped and moved on, and that's it.
It's just insane. Was the your tenant present in court?
He was present. He was there. I'm glad he was there because just some sort of accountability. You know what I mean? Like this, when I first saw that it was going to be over Zoom and I initiated for it to be in person, my thought was, people need to show up when there's a dispute like this. You got to show up and like have some accountability. And, you know, if he gets his day in court, he gets to say whatever he wants to say, and I get to say whatever I want to say. So he did show up, but again, no facts of the case were heard, or there was no option to give any facts of the case. It's really strange.
So did you guys exchange any words or anything, looks, anything?
No, he wouldn't even look at me. I didn't really want to look at seeing him gives me anxiety and makes my blood boil. I mean, it's like it's like, I want to know what's going through this guy's head. Between you and me, I have no idea what he's thinking. I mean, what is his goal? I don't know. I would love to just have a conversation with him and just say, what's your plan here? You know, what are you trying to accomplish? But no, it's just nothing like that.
It's weird. And Jesse Jones, the Cairo 7, showed up. Did that seem to bother your tenant at all, the possibility of there being a news coverage of the event?
You know, I want to make it, like, really clear that, like, I am not exactly advocating for news to follow this around it like it is. It's sort of blowing up because people are relating to it and finding it disgusting, which I appreciate because I think it's disgusting and it should be aired out. But I didn't know they were going to show up in the capacity that they did. And it did make me feel good because this stuff needs to be shown. For the first 8 months of this whole thing, I just felt like alone, even though my family's been great and my friends have been really supportive. It just feels like my government's letting me down. It's a weird feeling. And so to have like the news there right up in the commissioner's face, just keeping him accountable. I mean, that felt the best. That was like, wow, someone's listening and maybe we could change something out of this.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. But I mean, March, that's insane. And so, I mean, is anything going to change for you? You're living in your van with your dog through the winter months. I mean, do you have another plan?
I mean, I've got a really good kerosene heater I built in there. It's really cozy actually, but I have friends, places I can stay. I mean, it's not like dire. I'm not on the streets and I don't want to make anyone feel like I'm on the streets, so to speak. I'm also pretty resilient. I can handle whatever. But this sucks. Nonetheless, I would just prefer to be in my house with the bathroom I built, with the heated floor I put in myself. Like, that sounds nice over winter. A van doesn't sound that good. So it is what it is, I guess. And another thing that's pretty dismal about this isn't ending in March 12th. March 12th is the hearing date. It's best case scenario, March 12th happens. The sheriffs are backed up months, like we talked about. So March isn't the end. It's fall, probably.
Wow. And that'll be a year and a half without your house, approximately?
It's looking like it. It's hard to even think about it that way. But yeah, I mean, it's looking like that.
Yeah.
The commissioner did say something briefly. And I think it's because the camera was in his face. He said there may be something coming out in December, which may be like a proposal that would speed these up just because there is such a backlog, but no elaboration. I haven't heard that from anyone else. It was just a blip that came out of the commissioner's mouth. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think attention, you know, shining a light on what's happening is unfortunately all that can be done in this scenario. Are you considering any sort of extreme measures like not paying the mortgage or anything like that, even though that hurts you?
No, I'm going to continue paying bills. It's fine. Everything's fine. I mean, the thing about the utilities, which is crazy to me, is I'm letting those slide right now. I'm not paying those. And the reason City of Seattle allegedly they don't put them to collections. They stay on the house. It could turn into a lien against the house, but it doesn't go to collections and doesn't collect interest. And those are utilities I feel the most wronged by, because those came from Airbnb tenants. And I'm going to just push to not pay those and see if I can get those dealt with. I think the city should step in there. They're the ones who gave them the license. So, but as far as all the bills go, as far as keeping everything above, you know, board, I'm going to keep everything paid, of course.
It's wild. Well, so, Jason, we appreciate you following up with us. I'm sorry that this happened. It's like worst case scenario, and we'll just keep tracking things and please keep us updated. Okay.
Yeah, I will do. Thanks for following up.
It's just ridiculous stuff. I seriously feel so bad for him. And then, as he pointed out, March, sure, there's going to be another hearing on March 12th, but that's not going to be the end of it. Even if, you know, judge says, yep, get out of there, eviction approved, and King County Sheriff's Office is months behind on carrying those out. So you just feel for the guy. And he, as he said as well, he's not the only one in court when he was there going through that. I mean, his story might be particularly egregious and have a lot of twists and turns and ups and downs, but there are a lot of small-time landlords being victimized by these tenant protections and by, you know, the protections put in place during COVID that made it nearly impossible to evict people, created this huge backlog in the system. And, you know, for these people like Shama Sawant, who she's prided herself on pushing, you know, these tenant protections, and she says it's about big, greedy landlords. We're talking about, most of the people we're talking about who are impacted by those policies the most are small landlords who are going to move out of Seattle, that get sort of options for affordable housing, which is what you say we need so much of. So it's all just really backward. I will say, though, if you only listen to the podcast and you don't watch, you miss the cute dog that Jason Roth had on his lap. Looked like it had a little doggy toupee.
It did.
I love that every time we see him or talk to him, he has a dog with him.
I know, so
you need that emotional support. We also have a... We got both the dogs in the studio again today, but they're being very good. So I don't want to rock
don't
the ship.
It.
Oh, I feel like Matt kind of heard me. Stop it. Stop scratching. Anyway, okay. We will get to Bob Ferguson's lawsuit against Meta next. But when it comes to the state of the economy, you might expect to see home prices falling. But that's actually not the case, which seems a little counterintuitive. Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com explained why.
We should be experiencing not necessarily a crash, but we should be seeing a reduction in purchase price. When you have interest rates jump up by, you know, nearly 40% in over a 12-month time span, that should be compressing pricing, but we're actually seeing the opposite. Prices have come up about 5% since the beginning of the year. And overall transaction count is down, just meaning less houses overall are selling, but they're still selling pretty quickly because there's been a lot of pent up demand, you know, over time. So, it's going pretty well, but in general, there are not enough homes on the market to meet demand.
Yeah. So if you've been thinking about selling your home, maybe you have a little flexibility and you're like, should I hold off? Reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He's going to do a free market analysis for you. That's where he's going to start to let you know if your home is well positioned to hit the market. I might also recommend some improvements that they can help you with on the front end. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Bob Ferguson has joined a multi-state bipartisan lawsuit against Meta, which is the parent company of both Facebook and Instagram. He accuses the company of intentionally targeting kids and hurting their mental health just to make a buck. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, let's first explain kind of the basis for the lawsuit here, because there are some things I agree with and there are some things I disagree with. But overall, I think that Bob Ferguson and the other attorney generals, both Republicans and Democrats who are suing over this, are missing a larger point in this conversation. So Bob Ferguson comes out, he has a press conference, and he explains the crux of the lawsuit against Meta.
Meta intentionally designed its social media platform to be more addictive to kids and young people. The company knew that targeting youth posed risks to their mental health. Meta did not just disregard those risks, the company exploited them to maximize their profits. Meta did all of this while publicly downplaying and misrepresenting the science of the risk to kids, contradicting their own claims that they put safety first.
Now, it's kind of a tangent, but I could talk about how the state of Washington and Jay Inslee downplayed the risk to kids of keeping them home for so long during the pandemic and how Bob Ferguson didn't have anything to say about that. But that's a different conversation for a different time. But he did mention, and this is kind of the debate or conversation that I want to have with you guys today, is, you know, what about parents? There are untold number of things that are a threat to kids, that are a danger to kids, that are unhealthy to kids. And where is it, you know, private entities' responsibility, a private company's responsibility, the government's responsibility to step in and protect kids? And where is it the duty of, when is it the duty of the parent to make sure that their children aren't engaging in behavior that can hurt their mental health? Here's Bob Ferguson on that kind of topic.
Virtually any parent who has a young person in their household, who has a phone, understands the challenges of the use of how addictive these social media platforms can be, and I think candidly have some amount of tension with their child as a result of that. Parents are doing their best to protect their kids from this addiction, but they are up against a sophisticated social media giant that is exploiting its most addictive features for profit.
And to that, I'm kind of like, well, take their phone away, check their phone every night. And maybe I'm not a parent. And so that's why when I get into these issues of, hey, parents need to step up and do better, I'm like, well, you know, can I really say that as someone who doesn't have any kids and doesn't know? I also think it is, and I agree with him, it is hard to watch your kid 24 hours a day and know, hey, if they go over to a friend's house, hey, if they go to school, are they getting access to these platforms anyway? But there was a student who spoke with Bob Ferguson, and she says she actually wishes that her parents had done more to set controls for her.
Inevitably, I joined the most popular social media platform as a means of trying to fit in, and I got sucked into the algorithm. I wish my parents had set parental controls, but they didn't.
Okay, that kind of sounds like the argument Meta will make in court is, you know, parents can set parental controls that you can put in place on the devices that your children use. And will that be the end all be all? No, like I said, there might be opportunities for your child to access this information when they're with their friends, when they're out of sight, when they're at school. But, you know, look at alcohol, for instance. Alcohol, kids, there are controls in place. Kids aren't allowed to drink alcohol. But do they? Yes. Did I? Yes. Before the age of 21. So it's tough because, you know, we don't like go after and sue, you know, beer companies. At least I don't think Bob Ferguson has for, oh, hey, kids can still access your beer because there are laws preventing kids from accessing beer. And just because they go out and go around those laws and around their parents to get it doesn't make that the company's fault. And so that's where this tension is at for me. So Bob Ferguson specifically points to a couple features that he says are specifically designed to get young people hooked on things like Instagram and Facebook. Specifically, he says, Meta designed features to provide prolonged and repeated dopamine or feel-good responses that discourage users from leaving the apps once they open them, tapping into their fear of missing out or FOMO. He says this includes the like or reaction button, push notifications that ping the user repeatedly with sounds, vibrations, or other audiovisual alerts, and a scroll function that feeds a user endless content known as an infinite scroll. So, I mean, honestly, when I read that, I'm like, well, that's a problem for me, too. I'm always on the infinite scroll, and I'm not a child.
That's what I was going to say, is that was one of his main arguments, is that they're directed, these things are directed at children, and that's not at all.
They're working on adults as well. And again, you know, parental controls are a thing. Parental controls can help with some of this. And Bob Ferguson proposes some changes that he would like Meta as a company to undertake. As his examples of potential changes to the social media platforms include, but are not limited to, altering or eliminating the like button, autoplay, or other features that encourage addictive use. I don't see how a like button encourages addictive use. That's kind of like just a general function of the page. Unless you're like trying to get more likes and that's about your mental health and you're like, oh, I have to keep posting so many more likes. Restricting the frequency of notifications and the manner with which they are delivered, eliminating infinite scroll, improving age gating or strengthening controls for age requirements, stricter enforcement of multiple fake accounts. More generally, creating a separate type of account or feature set for any user under a specified age, restricting features most harmful to youth. But how would you know that? I mean, unless you're going to upload, you know, an identification for every single user, or how would you be able to control whether someone creates a fake account and says they're over the age of 18? So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But I really think this boils down to, as I said, there are so many things that can harm our kids' mental health, that can hurt our kids physically, that can do damage to our kids psychologically. But you cannot, as the government, regulate all of it. And you cannot expect companies who are providing a legitimate service to the public. I think social media is legitimate for a lot of reasons. You can't expect them to be parents. Meta is not a parent. Meta and its platforms are not a replacement for parenting. And so I really do feel like a lot of this comes down to, and I've preached, you know, getting the government out of the home on other issues. So I can't, I guess, decide, oh, well, on this issue in particular, I think the government should take control of this and do the parenting. No, I really think that that is left to parents. And are there going to be some parents who are better at that than others? Are there going to be some parents who are more, recognize more the risks associated with this type of obsessive use of social media on kids? Yeah. But why should we want the government to control you know, what companies are doing in that way to that extent. So that's what I really struggle with. And that seems a little unbelievable to me that we're not having a broader conversation that's really focused on getting a message out to parents about what you can do to limit your child's exposure to this kind of content. So
also, I just had to say, I mean, if you're going to go after this, I do think that TikTok has proven.
And I don't know, maybe he has sued over TikTok. I don't remember.
No, because you'd have to sue China. So he's not suing China over TikTok. So why Mark Zuckerberg and Meta?
Because kids don't use Facebook too.
Like, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, kids aren't on Facebook. Instagram, you want to go to the problem, but TikTok more so.
Yeah, and TikTok's showing kids how to steal cars. So that's where they're getting all of those instructions and like the challenges and all of that. Yeah. So it's very selective.
Again, it's the end route around like the government's problem solving is always really screwed up. Like with the stealing of Hyundais and Kias from these TikTok videos.
Yeah.
What did Bob Ferguson do? He wants to go after, he encouraged Hyundai and Kia to not make their cars so easy to steal, which, yeah, they probably should fix whatever bug, you know, was associated with making it so easy to steal. But no, you go after the root of the problem and the behavior of the kids and the criminals who are exploiting this weakness in the Kia and Hyundai system. And so I feel that way with this as well, which is like, okay, you can go after Meta and Instagram and get rid of likes or whatever it is, but you don't think that there are other things out there. I mean, there are going to be endless things your children can access if given the opportunity to. I mean, not even to mention the really horrible stuff they could be accessing. If your kid has a phone and it's not regulated to the point where they are so obsessive on social media, what else do you think your kid is using that phone for?
Oh, yeah.
Much worse stuff.
Exactly.
Than obsessing over likes and content on Meta and Instagram. I mean, pornography, you name it, being lured by predators across the country. So, I mean, you can put kids, you can't really put them in a protective bubble. But when it comes to closing off their universe to things like this, it's got to fall on the parents. The government can't regulate it all.
Because and I agree, everybody's like, you know, it's not as hard to, or it's not as easy as you think to take their phone. You're right, but you can do hard things to protect your kids, or you can choose not to. And I agree that kids should have phones. You know, I mean, we do have this technology that allows them to be more accessible when you need to find them at 12 years old or whatever, go pick them up or whatever. But there's parental controls on phones that you cannot access the internet or whatever it is. And I just think that, yeah, it's hard.
It's parenting's hard. I have friends who do that, though.
Oh, I do. And in fact, I have lots of friends that do that.
Not a friend of mine, but Matt Walsh on the Daily Wire, he posted this picture once of his kids in the backyard, like making a stick fort. And he's like, I don't let them use their phones. So this is what they do. And I'm like, I love it. And I know that that's kind of one end of the spectrum. But can't you get phones still? Because, you know, just make phone calls and texts.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm not telling you how to parent. But this, by the way, was a subject of our subscriber poll for today. And so I'll read your comments on it coming up momentarily.
I think you have to know your kid. And that might not be necessary for every kid. But if you see signs of your kid being this influenced by social media, take it away.
And to have punishments. And I won't name names, but I have a couple kids who, you know, watch our dogs and stuff. And occasionally I can't get a hold of them. And then I'll see them a couple days later. I got my phone taken away. And it's like all the time. And they're good kids. And so I'm like, wow, your parents must have strict rules about your phone.
Yes.
So I just kind of laugh it off. I'm like, I wonder what they did this time. But anyway, so we'll read some of your thoughts, subscriber thoughts on that coming up momentarily. First Mark Insurance, to me, if you're looking for ways to save money, you know, maybe you're just really struggling through inflation, the cost of gasoline. Everybody needs insurance. And I've been preaching the First Mark Challenge because not only do they have exceptional customer service, but they are going to find ways, if they can, to save you money on your insurance, your homeowner's insurance, your car insurance, your life insurance. You know, when Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge, so here we, you know, had two different lives that we were leading and all these different insurance companies that we'd found on our own to cover all these various things. And then we went to First Mark, did the First Mark Challenge. They now take care of all our insurance needs under one roof, local company. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark. And in case you've been wondering, you know, is First Mark a fit for me? He talked about who their ideal customer is.
Our client is anybody that values advice and wants to have a partner in their insurance buying decision and in helping them manage those accounts moving forward. So it can be as simple as someone that owns a car and rents an apartment to the uber wealthy that have assets all across the world that we need to insure. So we really, what's most important for us is somebody that values this partnership and wants to have us guide them through it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, a good time to check in with FirstMark and to do the FirstMark Challenge, you're probably going to see next time you come up for renewal on whatever plan you have, insurance rates go up because there's been a lot of issues lately. And so if you see that, that's a good time to reach out to FirstMark because you don't have to just live with it. I think some people might think, oh, my insurance rates went up. I just have to deal with it. You might not have to. So reach out to FirstMark, FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, Karine Jean-Pierre. It's been a while since we checked in on our favorite White House press secretary. There was this viral moment. You might have seen the clip, and I want to go through it and go through kind of her response to try to clean up the situation. This is a story from Fox News. Karine Jean-Pierre says she misheard question in viral moment that seemingly dismissed anti-Semitism. So I'm going to play, I think, Nicole, the first clip we have is the controversial statement, right? Okay. So let's play her controversial answer before we read to you how she tried to clean it up.
Level of concern right now about the potential rise of anti-Semitism in light of everything that's going on in Israel.
So a couple of things. We have not seen any credible threats. I know there's been always questions about credible threats. And so just want to make sure that that's out there. But look, Muslim and those perceived to be Muslim have endured a disproportionate number of hate-fueled attacks. And certainly President Biden understands that many of our Muslim, Arab Americans and Palestinian American loved ones and neighbors are worried about the hate being directed at their communities. And that is something you heard the president speak to in his address just last Thursday. And so one of the things that the president has done is directed his team, Homeland Security team, to prioritize prevention and disruption of any emerging threats that could harm the Jewish, the Muslim, Arab Americans, or any other communities. And that is something that the president has sought to do and since day one. As you know, the president ran on bringing protecting communities, obviously, but bringing people together, the soul, protecting the soul of the nation. And so that is something that the president takes very, very seriously. We're going to continue to denounce any sort of hate towards any American here. And so that's what we're going to continue to be steadfast on. Again, he has advised, directed his Homeland Security team to make sure that they're on top of this.
What? What kind of word vomit, word soup was that? So, Nicole, can you re-up that cut for me? And just, I just want to hear the beginning of it again, the question in her first initial
level of concern right now about the potential rise of anti-Semitism in light of everything that's going on in Israel.
So a couple of things. We have not seen any credible threats. I know there's been always questions about credible threats. And so just want to make sure that that's out there. But look, Muslim and those perceived to be Muslim have endured
a disproportionate. So the question is clearly about anti-Semitism. And she almost immediately launches into talking about Muslim Americans. And I'm not saying that we also don't need to be concerned about it. I mean, there was a horrifying instance in the Midwest of like some guy stabbing a 5 or 6 year old kid to death because, you know, he was Middle Eastern. So, but it's very strange the way that she pivoted and then it just turned into full word vomit. So she's saying that she didn't, her excuse for this is that she didn't hear the question correctly. And I'm not in her brain. I don't know if that's true or not. She said, quote, I appreciate, this was in a response to Fox's question about it. I appreciate the chance to address this. Yes, I did mishear the question. As I have foot stomped many times from the podium and on the air, anti-Semitism is an abomination that this president has fought against his entire life. And I feel strongly about that work. That's why in the briefing room, I blasted the repulsive increase in anti-Semitic rhetoric, conspiracy theories, and hate crimes in our nation, calling out that tragically this is a rising threat, and it's a threat the president is taking a concrete action every day to fight. I'll be honest, I tend to believe her. The answer was so ridiculous, and she has spoken out even against the squad.
Yes.
But it doesn't change the fact that she's so bad at her job.
She's so terrible at her job.
She's so bad.
Of course, I don't think that she is encouraging or wants to dismiss anti-Semitic acts of violence or anything, but you're terrible.
Well, even if, and I'm curious what she misheard it as, and that's what Fox didn't say or follow up on.
Well, that's what she doesn't say.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they followed up and said, okay, what did you think? think you heard? Because if I know the question she thought she heard, then I might be able to work myself through that
maybe,
disaster of an answer
me,
a little bit better.
To me, her lack of, you know, filling that blank in is like, meh, I just heard one or two words and I just went with what I had written down.
Yeah, and then just went into just word soup, which has been, you know, a perpetual problem. But anyway, I mean, I'm, you know, I don't assign the worst of intentions to her for everything, but I do unequivocally think she is just an awful White House press secretary.
Sticking with it.
We haven't had a good White House press secretary in quite some time. And by good,
the blonde guy, spiky hair, glasses for Obama.
Oh, I thought for a second you were talking about like Sean Spicer, recent blonde guy.
Back in the day. Oh gosh. Anyway, he was the most entertaining to me. He was kind of cute.
Oh, interesting.
It's Obama's guy.
That's Nicole's barometer of a good White House press secretary. Is he hot? Really sexist, Nicole. Gross. I was kidding. All right. I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. And this week I've been sharing an update on Ben and Leslie, a married couple that had tremendous success on the program. Because I really think if you've struggled with weight, now obviously, you know, I gained 40-something pounds during the pandemic, but that wasn't my first up and down with weight. I think that it can take some of the joy out of some things in life. And it limits, you know, what you want to get out and do. Like when I had gained 40 pounds, did I want to go out on a hike? No. And now I'm like, oh, that sounds much more pleasing to me to go out and get some exercise. And that's what Ben and Leslie have found. They went to San Jose in October, ran the Rock and Roll 5K, 10K. They said it was a blast and much more attainable and fun because of the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. And they also noted something that I've experienced as well, which is, you know, you have yearly events, you have ups and downs in life where you're going to get off track a little bit. But one thing I love about the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan is it's so easy to get back on track without beating yourself up. And you have that plan, and you have that program that you can go back to for the rest of your life. So if you've been thinking about doing it, especially as the holidays come up and all these events in the new year, don't wait until January 1st. Some New Year's resolution, do it now. That's what I did last year. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. That 15 minutes could change your life. It certainly did for me, and I know it did for Ben and Leslie as well. All right, with that, let's get to our daily subscriber poll. Of course, it had to do with the ongoing situation that we've been discussing with Meta and multiple states, including Washington State and Attorney General Bob Ferguson suing Meta, saying that they're targeting kids and ruining their mental health. So the question I posed to subscribers on Patreon and Locals this morning, Attorney General Bob Ferguson announced Washington will join a multi-state lawsuit against Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram. Ferguson accuses Meta of intentionally putting profits before the well-being of millions of its most vulnerable users. Is Meta responsible for how its platforms are used by minors? So let's get to a couple comments. Crafty Grandma Crispy on Locals says, ultimately, it is up to the parents to limit screen time. Even back in the 70s and 80s, my screen time, TV, was limited and enforced by my parents. It comes down to personal responsibility. They may be guilty of gearing advertising toward kids like the cigarette companies did. Good point. But ultimately, parents are responsible for their kids' screen time. You know what show, Nicole, my mom wouldn't let me watch?
Which show?
It's going to, well, maybe it won't surprise you. We were not allowed to watch Family Guy.
Oh, yeah, I'm not surprised. I wasn't allowed to watch anything, really. Yeah. My mom, I mean, she probably regulated the wrong shows, but but definitely all of those. Like, I think she waited a while till I could even watch The Simpsons.
Yeah. Cookie, whose avatar is a photo of him and Dory. Oh, I like that picture. I haven't seen that. Says, while Meta shares responsibility, it's important to note that too often parents let their children not only have access to cell phones, but let them have unlimited access for hours on end and not monitoring what their children are viewing. I've actually seen some animated videos geared toward children with messages of be gay, be trans, and the fun and affirmation of deciding to choose to do that. Phones are the new indoctrination centers. All right, a couple more. And by the way, the overwhelming number of subscribers who took this poll said no, Meta is not ultimately responsible for how its platform is used by minors. Barbara Morrison says, yes and no, they've created an online environment that clearly hooks kids into it. However, parents are the gatekeepers for what you allow into your home. Not sure a lawsuit is the answer. Let's read a couple more here. Sally, parents need to parent better. When is Bob going after TikTok? That's what Nicole said, do. Let me see here. Jacob, lovely. Another Bob lawsuit that's going to go nowhere and end up costing we the taxpayers even more money. Yeah, so a little bit of split. This wasn't an overwhelming poll. 53% said no. 34% said yes. 13% said, They're not sure. All right, let's get to more questions and comments from the live stream today on some of the other topics. Tracy with a $9.99 super chat. Great event last night. Totally worth the two-hour drive. Your ring was so sparkly on stage. I'm Team Reichert, but was impressed with Semi Bird. His driver walked me to my car since I was alone. So last night we were at the KTTH Freedom Series up at the historic Everett Theater. He drove 2 hours. That's awesome. And had a good time. I hosted a panel with our friend Jonathan Cho, with Glenn Morgan and Victoria Taft about the state of independent media, the state of mainstream media, etc. So I had a good time. Dave Reichert spoke. Semi Bird spoke. Matt says, Brandy, you did a great job last night. Thank you. He says there was not enough discussion about Cho's highlighter pink shoes, though. Jonathan Cho, listen. He's good at a lot of things. His fashion choices are questionable. He did have some, I always give him crap for that. He did have some, it's funny because he's like.
I feel like it's a statement piece.
It's definitely his thing. Mm-hmm. He was like business on top and party on bottom. For sure. If that makes sense.
He had, he looked like an Easter egg in a jacket.
Yeah, so it was mm-hmm. funny. Wow.
That peach was, pants, yeah, hot like pink a polka shoes, dot tie. Yes. A light pastel t-shirt or shirt.
You're also pretty judgy of what I wear sometimes, so. Yeah. Nicole's super judgy. I complimented Whatever. You on your outfit today.
I compliment you often. Yes, you did.
I did, yeah.
I had to get dressed up today.
Yes.
For the show. Okay. I usually don't get dressed up because I'm not going to compete with your dressiness. So then I just wear a shirt that people can try to figure out what it says, things like that.
I went to the, wow, really off track on this.
Really off track.
I'm always overdressed. I'm going to always be the most overdressed person in any room because I always wear dresses usually. Yeah. But lately I've been trying to, you know, like wear a hat like down. So I went to the coffee shop that's by our studio and they see me every day in a dress and I come in and I looked atrocious, but I had like a little sweatshirt and I had a little,
wait,
what do you call it?
Can I give it a little more?
What?
It was a beanie that you were wearing.
Beanie.
But you were in like green pants, a red shirt, and a beanie. So yeah. When you left, I was like, wow, you really got a Santa Claus vibe going on.
Why? You didn't take the squeaky toys away from the dogs?
Oh, that's my job.
Yeah, yes.
The dogs are.
But anyway, so I went to the coffee shop. He's like, "Oh, hi, Brandy." I was like, "You're usually so dressed up." I was like, "You can say it." Anyway, way off track. Mugshot Espresso says Reichert got results. Reichert has won elections. I want a winner, and Reichert is one of the most humble guys I've met. Referring, I'm assuming, to both Dave Reichert being at this event last night as well as Semi Bird. It's no surprise that I think Dave Reichert is probably the only person who can beat Bob Ferguson. I also have come to admire Dave Reichert's character over the years. You know, I did many interviews with him while I was in the mainstream media, including when he decided to not run for re-election in Congress. I think he has a big heart, and I think he's a really humble guy. I will say there were a couple, and I've reached out to Jason Rantz to get video of the event last night because I was listening to Semi Bird backstage, and he said something that just really, and I want to reach out to him to just try to understand where he's coming from. You know, Jason Rantz had asked Semi Bird a question about, you know, what's going to happen. You know, we can't afford to have both of you in the primary. Republicans can't, because if you split the vote, then there might not be any Republican who moves forward to the general election. So what's going to happen? And Semi Bird basically said, well, the only reason we're in this position is because of someone else. We already had a candidate. So mm-hmm. suggesting that since he entered the race first and had been campaigning, Dave Reichert shouldn't have entered the race. And that's ridiculous. I mean, so the first person who files is the one who gets to run? I mean, even Democrats have people running against Bob Ferguson, and that doesn't make any sense to me. So no one is entitled to the governor's office. Dave Reichert's not entitled to it. Bob Ferguson's not entitled to it. Semi Bird isn't entitled to it either. And you're not entitled to get to run unopposed. So it was a very divisive thing. So we'll reach out. I'm going to get the video from Jason because it really struck me as like, what?
Yeah, I'm struggling with a don't attack your
don't
own
attack.
Party.
Well, like, especially
don't
when you have a just good opportunity.
Focus. Mm-hmm.
Right. Focus on what you're going to do in the difference. Not like, oh, the establishment is against me. Like, okay, that's what Lauren Culp did. He lost by 500,000 mm-hmm. votes. And that's ridiculous. So anyway, we'll reach out to Semi Bird about that and I'll play the clip. And because, I mean, what does that mean? If Good Space Guy is the first one to file for a Seattle City Council seat, then he gets to run unopposed? That's just not how the system works.
No.
And that's kind of offensive to voters, to be honest, that they shouldn't get choices. It really threw me off. All right, on Blaine and the school district saying, oh, we didn't approve that handout. Matthew says, we see teachers doing this more and more because A, they are emboldened because there are no ramifications. And more importantly, more and more activists are going into teaching. Let me see here on parenting. Oh, we'll skip past that because we just read some comments on that.
That's the majority of the comments.
Oh,
on
Jason
today's
says
chat.
On On Jason Roth, the landlord, Crafty Grandma Crispy says, is there a GoFundMe for Jason? I think there is, right?
Yes, I think a friend just started one for him. So
do you want to just put it in the YouTube comments, or we can put it in the comments of today's episode or something? Okay, we can read some more comments on parenting. Beth says, Ferguson is way behind the times. TikTok is much more popular now and much more damaging. Mandy says, my kids have phones because I can't trust people. They've had Instagram, but they are my accounts they use, so I can see everything they do. That's smart. Mm-hmm. They know that if I find anything on their phones, I don't. Was that cut off? It just ends with, they know that if I find anything on their phones, I don't.
I delete.
I'm assuming, Mandy, there was more to that. Let me see here. Oh, Todd Welch answered you as Jay Carney. Jay Carney was the Obama spokesperson.
I was going back and looking at pictures. I think my taste has changed a little bit over the years.
Yeah, I mean, you're really picky.
He was entertaining. He tended to, I was entertained by his press conferences back in the day, and maybe that's why I was attracted to a funny guy.
Yeah, you prioritize looks above all else. I just talked to you about this today. It's true.
Don't say that. That's not true.
You have high standards when it comes to someone's aesthetics.
No. I mean, I don't think I should be dating a 10, if that's what you're saying.
I'm not saying you can't date a 10.
But I think that, you know, taking care of yourself says something about you. But I also don't need the most physically fit, because I'm not the most physically fit. So you're saying characteristics like that. But I think that, no.
She's funny is,
well, I know, Nicole's I'm trying to defend myself. You're making me very shallow over here.
All I'm saying is I've tried to, like, recommend people before, and you find one little thing wrong with them, you know.
Hey, I've waited this long. I better get the best.
I think you're scared to fall in love, Nicole. I think you're scared to fall in love.
Where would my cat sleep?
Why does this show get so off the rails sometimes? I mean, everybody's like, I'm going to stop listening.
Hey, really quick about last night's event. There were quite a few listeners there.
Yeah, oh my God, you guys had your...
listeners.
You had your Make Common Sense Great Again...
hats.
Oh, you had Make Common Sense Great Again hats. Your Common Sense 2024 shirts made us feel nice. Very supportive.
Right in the front row, Matt, I believe.
Yes, Matt.
And Julie, who's on East Side.
Yes, and Andy was in the front row. I saw, I saw a few subscribers who we know. So thanks for coming.
And a couple new ones, which we really appreciate.
I love it. Although I did ask the audience,
coming
I was like, how many of you are subscribers? I was surprised not more people raised their hands.
Although I will say, so Semi had some, like, I feel like,
plants?
A lot of plants in the audience, very spaced out, whistling, very loud. It was very interesting because they were there for him and then gone.
Maybe
right
they're
after.
Just super fans. They didn't care to hear from
whatever.
Anyone else.
Either way, he probably got the loudest cheers.
More than me?
I would say you got the second loudest.
From
the,
that's
pretty good.
That is pretty good.
I don't know. How many people are there? 12?
The only plant I had in the crowd was you.
That's right. And I wasn't very loud.
Oh, bummer. Okay. All right. Wow. We've really gotten off track, as we have a lot lately. Sorry, guys. Mm-hmm. It's the espresso. All right. We've been talking about our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital. And one of the things that I wanted to note, as we, you know, bring you every week some of his advice about investing in the state of the economy, is you can actually listen to his advice every week if you want. And knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. He hosts a show where he talks about all of this stuff at length. And it's really, really informative. So I recommend you checking that out. And one of the things he specializes in at Bulwark Capital is risk management, which, given the state of the economy, none of us can afford to be taking huge risks that could cost us in retirement.
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, you know, we know, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly, right? Now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows, right? But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also, when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything, right?
Yeah. So if you're worried about that, which honestly, I don't want to scare people, but I think that he makes a lot of good points about the state of the economy and how it's just an eventuality before things come crashing down, I'd recommend two things: reaching out to Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, but also checking out his radio show, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. You've worked hard for your money all these years. You want to make sure your risk is properly managed so you can enjoy retirement. I mean, I think that's something that we all want. All right. Up in Snohomish County, Sheriff Adam Forney, who I'm a big fan of, I think he has come in and been like, I don't care what people think of me. I'm going to do what I think needs to be done to keep people safe. And he has taken another step to try to combat some of the crime issues in Everett. Let's get to it in our sanity check. So Adam Forney has decided, Sheriff Adam Forney, to open a new substation in South Everett. And Nicole, I'm going to lean on you to talk about some of the issues there, because that is a neighborhood you're somewhat familiar with. Am I not supposed to tell people where you live?
I know Everett, but I don't know all of the issues.
Some of the crime issues. So this is a Como News article. New sheriff substation in South Everett business district to address persistent crime. It says drug abuse, property crime, and street violence have created ongoing issues in commercial district in South Everett. A new sheriff substation has been established in Mariner Square at the corner of 4th and 128th Street. Sheriff Forney said it's meant to support an increased deputy presence in the South Everett area, and that's because he is on Team Sanity. That's because Sheriff Adam Forney knows that if you have crime that is happening at a greater frequency in a particular area, that having a visible presence of law enforcement is absolutely a deterrent. And that's why it's so detrimental in Seattle, where they're down so many officers. You don't have enough officers to be able to have them out there proactively patrolling areas, being that visible deterrent. And it makes sense, by the way, to have a substation in an area that has a lot of problems with crime, so you can more quickly respond to reports of criminal acts. So this is just the sane thing to do. It's the smart thing to do. And I wish that we saw this sort of tactic in more high crime areas. You know, occasionally in Seattle, they'll move a mobile police precinct down to 3rd Avenue, but it'll be there for like one day. And they'll be like, boop, this is a brick and mortar. I mean, how many empty storefronts are there on 3rd Avenue?
Oh, in Seattle? A lot.
They're almost all empty on that stretch of 3rd Avenue between Pike and Pine. Put a permanent police presence in that area.
Right. And I do know this area, and this is where there's a hotel there that has quite the...
Ladies of the Night?
There's probably some of those, but there's a lot of homeless and drug use going on in that area, and they're camping out, and it has affected the business in the area. That's like, it's very close to where a Starbucks closed down. It's there's a lot going on there, and I think yes, with that presence, I mean, that's where it's, you know, there's people planted in the center of the medium, like in between the lanes. Yeah. I mean, they're, I think it'll make a big difference, because they actually have been communicating with the people that are out there, right? So yeah. This is the difference that Everett has been empowered to make for cops, right? Yeah. So they've been able to actually communicate with these people and get them off the street. So this is near, so there's a Home Depot, and that's where they, I told him last time he was on the show how well he did cleaning up that area, yeah. The car dealership, all of that. And so some moved, and now he's addressing that. Yeah. So I think that's great.
And yeah, crime is going to move from place to place, but if you put an emphasis in an area, you're actually making arrests, you're contacting individuals, you're trying to get them help, then you are limiting the amount of that criminal activity that is going to navigate to some other area of town. And I heard from a car dealership owner who they are actually in Everett proper, but had reached out for help from the city to the city of Everett repeatedly, didn't get help. And so Adam Forney heard the story, sent some deputies over there to assist them. And so this is, I mean, I don't really endorse candidates, but I mean, this is common sense stuff. I think he's been doing a great job up in Snohomish County. I pray to God that he gets to keep his job.
I know.
Because this is a sort of sane, rational leadership that every single city and county in Washington State could use. And that has been our closing sanity check for today. And that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Thank you to those of you who came to the event in Everett. We got to do some events of our own, you know? Not a KTDH Freedom Series, but a Undivided.
Bowling with Brandy. That was the idea somebody gave me.
Bowling with Brandy? Listen, I'm an ace. So
I
as
think
long
that
as
would
you're
be
okay
really fun.
With losing, then yeah, we can do that. All right. Love you guys. We'll see you back on the live show tomorrow. If you've not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. You can sign up for just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. You get access to our exclusive subscriber polls every day, other content, as well as our episode Sundays with Subscribers, an exclusive Sunday show. We have a really good guest this week. I'm not going to spoil it until tomorrow. We'll see you then.